I'm having a hard time locking in. I think I'm locked in. Son of a bitch. I'm locked in! Yes! And there goes the intro music. It's GloucesterCast 199. Very exciting. This is the warm-up for the 200th. The warm-up for the 200th episode of the GloucesterCast. We have some new guests today from Nebraska. We're going to get to them in a second. But going around the room, we got Jim and Pat Dalpiez.
Good morning, Gloucester.
If we didn't skip one because we were so busy, you guys would have been here for the 200th.
Yeah.
But that's all right. We got the legendary skipper of the Green Dragon, but not the captain this year for the Schooner Festival. That was your son's honor, Al Bezanson.
Andy
was the captain this year.
It's his boat now.
Oh, officially on the papers?
53 years is enough for me. It's his problem now.
There you go. And we got Monica and Gerald Osmera from Nebraska.
Woo-hoo. Good morning, Gloucester.
Hey, nice. They got that right off the bat. And you guys just stumbled upon this place. Is that right?
Kind of? Fishermen down at the dock yesterday. And
my brother lived here 15 years ago, 20 to 15 years ago. And he said, come to Gloucester. So we're here.
From Nebraska. Never been to the Northeast?
Never.
Love it. All right. We're going to get to you in a sec. Yeah. Nicole Schraft is here. First week back at school.
Right.
Is that a godsend or a curse? Or both?
Well, you're taping me. What am I supposed to say?
And your boss is a fan of the podcast, right?
No, I'm psyched to be back. I'm not in the classroom this year for the first time ever, so I'm not teaching anymore.
Oh, so, you're administrative?
Yeah.
So is that a bump up in pay? or is that a lateral move?
It should be, right? Yeah, no, it was great. It's excellent. Why do you do this every time?
No, sorry, whatever. So no, but that's but you have, first, do you have more responsibilities?
Yes. First week back at school.
What's your boss's name?
Paul Horvitz.
Paul Horvitz, this is a shout out to you because we know you listen to the podcast.
He does.
And we really like him. He was here. He's also Israel's brother. Is that correct?
Not brother, cousin. But family. Cousin. I always forget exactly. Okay. Paul and his wife Betsy would be great candidates for a podcast sometime.
Talk about the rotten children that come to your school?
No, not at all.
No, I'm kidding.
Huge shout out right now to Harbor Light Montessori.
Harbor Light Montessori, we love that school.
We do a lot of excellent things going on.
You brought the kids down here one time to a little tour, right?
To the dock, yeah. They often spend a lot of time at Maritime Gloucester over the summer. They actually spent weeks at Maritime Gloucester this summer working with Tony Wilbur. And
your school does amazing things
with
the kids. They really do. It's a fantastic.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
Kim Smith is here as well.
Good morning, Gloucester.
Yeah, and she's got a bunch of things. We got muskrat love going on today. Muskrat love.
I want a t-shirt. I want a t-shirt now. Yeah. Muskrat love.
All right. So anyway, we're gonna start out left to right. Jim and Pat, you guys are staying at the Beauport Hotel.
We spread
the love. When you guys come into town, you've stayed at the accommodations in the past.
We actually have never stayed at the accommodation.
What?
We do stay down in Rocky Neck when we come.
Where do you stay in Rocky Neck if you don't stay there? I didn't know there was any other places.
There's a woman up the street, near the top of the street, who rents out her apartments.
Oh, okay.
Mary Jane Cheedy. And we love it there. It looks right out onto the cove.
What's her name?
It's Mary Jane Cheedy.
Mary Jane Cheedy. Okay, yeah. We have to look that up.
And we rent for the month, and it's right on the cove, and it looks out on the water, and it couldn't be prettier. It's very nice.
Okay.
We love it there. Perfect, because you can walk to the studio. You can walk down.
You could walk to Captain Carlo's, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Wonderful. Actually, we look at it and say hi.
Right across the studio. We've seen a lot
of different places in the Gloucester area, but this visit was to the Beauport because it was new and on your recommendations from an earlier podcast. And you were right. It's just stellar. It's just absolutely beautiful. You feel so comfortable. Our room was...
Do you feel transported to another world, kind of? I mean, you're still in Gloucester, but it's...
Right.
It's
very feels like Newport.
It's a little disorienting in that regard because we're used to coming here and a certain...
And being funky.
Kind of, a certain sort of culture and that is a different culture, but it's very nice. We had dinner there and on Friday night, and the food was excellent.
The views are crazy, right?
The views are crazy. It was dark by the time we sat, but our, from our room, the minute I walked into our room, you could see, I could see the greasy pole. I could see the ship.
These people from Nebraska are saying, the greasy pole? It's the greasy pole.
It's like, we need to see the greasy pole. Yes.
Well, that was something between Pat and Jimmy earlier in the day.
You did not just do that.
It was the light shimmering in just right. They hit the greasy pole.
The other thing that struck us about the boat port was how many people they're employing. So obviously a lot of local people.
Yeah.
So that's, they have a lot of employees, it seems to me. And that's
it's first class all the way.
Yeah. We were really, really happy.
When you go up to the front desk, there's like three people standing there waiting to help
you. Oh, they're waiting for you downstairs. The main entrance to get in, which is the garage entrance.
Mm-hmm.
They have all these people there. They're opening the door for you. I can't say that happens in other places, that someone will open the door for you.
They slam it behind you.
Yes, often.
You know, I have to put the Met ring on or something, so you know. But anyway, they were wonderful there. You get in the elevator, it brings you up to the lobby, they meet you there, like you just said. Yeah. Now they explain to you, if you want to go any further, you better have that key to go to your rooms or the roof. Which is a nice little bar.
The views from that roof deck are ridiculous.
And going off the script a little bit, yesterday we went to, and I think of it because I think of you two especially, we went to Colby Farms for the sunflower.
Oh, wow, they're peak season, yeah. Oh. Is that bananas or what?
It was bananas. Cool.
That's a photographer's wet dream. Have you been there?
Not this year.
You should bring the boys.
Bridget Matthews crushes that scene area.
It was amazing. I first of all thought there would hardly be. What was I thinking? I thought there might be hardly anybody there because the weather wasn't real good. The sun wasn't real good. But we went, and it's huge, and there were so many people there. Lots of professional photographers taking family photos. But even with all those people, I was able to get some nice shots that didn't include the tops of heads or whatever. And it was gorgeous, and it's free, and I would recommend it.
I've been on a weekday.
I think you're almost
peak now. It's not so bad on a weekday.
Yeah.
Not so crap.
I've never heard of Colby Farms before I saw Bridget Matthews' photo last year.
Right, that's where so I was watching for it. Yeah. I was like, oh, we're going to be here, and it's just about at peak, I think.
It's almost as beautiful as seeing, like, 2,300 acres of corn.
Yeah.
Corn fields.
Yeah.
Or soybeans.
Yeah. It's right there. They're like neck and neck. Yeah.
I thought it was the Wizard of Oz scene with the poppies.
Yeah.
And running through the flowers. You see the kids running through the flowers. You know, Dorothy and the Tin Man, they were running through the poppy scene in Wizard of Oz. It was that big and that many people running.
Do they have any thing? You know how
Connor's Farm.
Connor's Farm has all
animals. They had a small pen with a few farm animals, and they have a little store and.
There's a farm stand there?
Farm stand. They had their own, they had a big sign. RV.
Right, yeah. Nice in there. Small, but very nice.
I have to bring the kids up there.
Yeah, you probably should. And I should have picked up on it. Somebody was serving free coffee, and it's a local coffee company.
I think it was called
Coffee.
I don't know. That's a value added.
Yes.
To the podcast right there, that recommendation.
Yes, very nice.
Great job, Pat. You're welcome anytime.
I'm your New York stringer.
That's it. I love it. Al Bazantin is here, fresh off a third place in the Betsy Ross Cup? Betty Ramsey plate, right? Platter?
No.
And that's the trophy for the...
For the small.
What class is that?
Small class. There are three classes. Large, is over 80 feet. Medium is 45 to 80. Small is under 45.
You left out a class.
No, there's only three.
No, because they made a new class for Columbia.
What we did is we made some subclasses. To back up, this race is... you got 3 hours to run this race, basically. And there might not be any wind for the first hour. Hmm. And so it gets to be a real challenge to handicap. And some of these people that show up, all they want to do is race. So we have to do a certain amount of conditioning and tell them, well, there isn't anybody, no one else has a boat like yours.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to be, like, we're going to have Ardell, which is slow, racing against a rocket ship. And you're in the same class, and too bad, but that's how it is. So what we did, Daisy Nell, bless her heart, this year, came up with the idea, well, we'll just have more awards. So we had some.
It's brilliant. Everybody gets a participation award.
So we had some classes, and there were four hot boats here this year.
Columbia.
Three of them were Cherubini's, which is a pretty nice yacht. They're made down in New Jersey. Marconi, they don't really look like schooners, you know, they Marconi rig, staysails and all that. And then there was another one.
Oh, yeah, the old Marconi rigs,
yeah,
of course.
One is Opella, which was a rocket ship that was built down in South Africa. And it's like 44.9 feet. And so we had some discussion in the committee, well, should they be in the small class or should they be in the big the medium, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so we worked through all that. We have more classes. And it was this year, because Maritime Gloucester is all disrupted and we didn't have a place to put a lot of the schooners, we kind of suppressed our recruitment effort a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe we don't want too many. Well, so, but in spite of that, we got like a record turnout. The schooners were coming out of the woodwork from everywhere, uninvited.
Well, it was wonderful. No, that is fantastic. But did that any of the impending storm have to do with that? They came to Gloucester as a safe harbor.
I'll tell you what, we lost two boats on account of the storm. American Eagle, the perennial favorite, came here from Rockland, Maine, and then immediately turned around and went home because he figured out that if he stayed for the race, he'd have to go home into this horrific northeasterly sea, and he had all these paying passengers aboard, and that's not,
puking everywhere.
So he went over and he got a bunch of lobsters, and back he went to Maine. And he told me, that's Captain John Foss, he told me in 30 years, he's done this race for 30 years, he's only missed 3 years.
And this was one.
Okay, but anyway, in this large class, we had three very historic boats. Adventure, built in the 20s in Essex. Roseway, built in the 20s in Essex. Letty
G.
Howard, built 1894 in Essex. And those three boats finished the race within just a few minutes of each other.
That was a great race. Amazing.
So that was in the large class. Now, in the medium class, what we did is we subdivided, we had M for Marconi rig. And so in that class is Light Rain, which is owned by the famous artist James Terrell. That boat is out of Oxford, Maryland. I think he lives in California, and he's a heck of a sailor. So we had Light Rain, and we had Ishmael in the Marconi. And Ishmael is as old or older than Adventure. And it's from the Vineyard. And it's owned by Fred Murphy, who was a merchant marine captain. He drove tankers. He's had that boat for 44 years. And this was his first year at the race. So in that Marconi class, we had Light Rain first, and then Ishmael was 10 minutes behind him. So then, also in the medium class, we had Tyrone, 60-foot schooner built, designed by Sam Crocker in Manchester, built 1939 in Dorchester, owned by Matt Sutphin from Chatham. So he was first in the traditional, and then Lannan, Thomas E. Lannan, was second, and I think that was it, the medium. Now, in the small class, we also had a very close race between Bald Eagle, which is all new sails, it's suddenly become a hot boat. And Green Dragon and Ishtar, owned by Stormy Mail. From some people know from he's from Provincetown and he's a famed whale biologist. And oh, just to add interest, when we were jockeying around for the start, a whale popped up right in the midst of these corners, right off the point. Yeah, it made it like a brief appearance. But and then another boat we had in the small class is Blackbird, which is an Alden schooner, 43 feet, owned by my friend Peter Thompson, who spent 16 years rebuilding this boat in his backyard in Freeport.
Wow.
And this was like his maiden voyage to come down here.
Oh, nice.
And he was Marconi class. Okay, but but that boat, again, was built in the 20s.
Yeah.
Beautiful old wooden schooner. So anyway, it was in it. So this race, the way they set the course is they put two buoys apart about two miles apart, which is designed to be a beam reach, which means the wind is 90 degrees to you, which is an easy point of sail for a schooner. And so it's like down around the buoy and back and forth. It's like a NASCAR race. And the nice thing about it is you got, whether you got a slow boat or a fast boat, at any one time you got boats beside you. You got boats coming the other way, like down I-95.
Yeah.
Great photo ops. And there was a terrific breeze this year.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There was a pretty good sea running out there, which made it pretty interesting. But anyway, so what happened, in spite of the best efforts of the committee to set the race like 90 degrees to the wind immediately changed, which actually made it a more challenging race because we had to do some tacking, which really makes it more interesting. Well, what happened, in the small boats that we were, like I was in the Green Dragon, when we got to the first mark, it was almost like a bad first lap in the Indy race, because we had four boats got there at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And there was a lot of current, and there was a floating buoy, which usually the current is obvious when you're out, you know, those big yellow inflatable things?
Yep.
You can see they stream out with the current.
Right.
But there was such a big sea and quite a lot of wind that the current wasn't obvious. So we were right on Stormy Mayo's tail, and Bald Eagle kind of was just coming around the mark and didn't intentionally cut him off. But he didn't, even though he's been at sea all his life, he doesn't know the racing rules. So he suddenly decided, uh-oh, I better turn, and when he deliberately missed the mark right in front of us, like he spun out, and that got us all cross-threaded, and we had some near misses at that. It would have been interesting if there was a spectator boat out there, because we had a cluster of four little schooners all jammed together.
That's the thing is I always wonder about that, who has the right, you know what I mean? Like, because you can't, obviously these are very expensive boats and, if you're not rubbing, you're not racing, NASCAR, that you don't want to be hitting each other. So, these guys have to be pretty versed in, if I have this, you have to back off a little bit. How do you back off in a schooner?
There are rules that I don't pay attention to them. But people that are serious racers, they know all these rules, and if you're a certain distance from the mark, and depending on the point of sail, you have to give way to this boat or that boat,
But you don't pay attention. You've been doing it your whole life.
No, but I don't know the rule. I don't care about that, My son knows that stuff, and he's been driving the boat for the last 15 or 20 years.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I got the credit for a lot of these, doing well in a lot of these races, but he was really the guy that's running the boat, So it made it very interesting, and we had three small boats that finished within very, very close together, finished the race. So it was a great race from that standpoint.
I want one of my bucket list items is to go on the Lannan, but not like even for a Gloucester one, like when they go into another port for a weekend schooner festival someplace else. Like I'd like to take the trip up with Heath.
Yeah.
Like it'd be, not that I know anything. I'd be able to take direction. That's about it. I don't know anything about sailing. But I would love to like go for a weekend and, you know, just get going to the, doing these towns when they throw a big party for you and get hammered. And that and get, you know, just, and then go out and,
where
and race, you know.
Where do you go next? You go to
Baltimore? Where's the next one?
The next race? It's a Great Chesapeake Bay schooner race. Some of these boats will be in that race. Light Rain will, Appella will be in that race.
That's coming up?
That's the middle of October. That's the granddaddy of all schooner races. Right. Baltimore to Norfolk, 127 miles. And in its heyday, we'd have 45 schooners. We pack them all into Fells Point in Baltimore, which is a historical, great old neighborhood. 60 bars and 7 blocks. I mean, how could you not like
that? Now you're talking about language.
And we'd have the routine, which get there like 5 days before the race starts. And
that's my kind of race.
So it's like...
You have the big barbecue too, don't you?
Well, the thing of it is, it's good enough to be like wrapped into a bunch of other schooners. But then you got all those like... hot spots in town. The first year I went to that race. I don't know if you ever
all the whorehouses.
Did I miss something?
No.
They had a television series called Homicide: Life on the Streets of Baltimore. Did you ever see that?
No.
It was an award-winning thing, and it was very realistic. And they filmed it right there where we tied up, and they were so.
Baltimore Harbor, hasn't it gone through a renaissance about 10, 15 years
ago? Baltimore Harbor is wonderful. It's better than Boston. I mean, they've got two water taxi companies that will run you all over the place. And there's a lot of interesting spots in Baltimore. There's a nice...
Is it true if you go one block off of that thing, you're in a place where you don't want to be?
Well,
I'll answer that for you.
It's pretty good. In fact, Bell's Point is... pretty darn safe, you know? But, yeah, it's true. There's some bad stuff going on now.
Yeah.
But anyway, the first year I was there, they were, we got off the boat, and there's police tape all over the block of the street, like, what's going on? And it turned they were filming this homicide in one of the bars that we hang out in. And then later on, I got to know the guys that ran the bar. And there were two cops from Boston, but that was the headquarters of that series. So in Baltimore, when there were all these fake cops running around doing this movie, and this is the truth. It didn't happen when I was there, but one time somebody robbed some place. It took a few minutes, and so then when they came running out the door, the fake cops had all just arrived, and so. The guys, honest to God, surrender.
That's great.
That is tremendous.
But, that's a great race. So anyway, the other thing about the getting back to the Gloucester race, the big news, of course, was Columbia. She's beautiful. She sped around the course much faster than anybody else.
In like 2 hours.
She got a special award that way because it wouldn't be fair to have Adventure racing against Columbia. So everybody was happy because Columbia got her award for being first. And the Essex schooners raced each other. So that was good.
Yeah,
now, the sequel to that, up at the Cape Ann Museum, there's a film about the original Columbia, and it plays continuously. And it's on the second floor, up in that room in the back where the exhibits are about the model of the schooner Elsie and all that. And that film shows, Columbia making her first trip. She was built 1923, I think. And Tom Halstead has done a voiceover of that film recently. And then there's set to 1920s and 30s jazz music.
Oh, how wonderful.
And you can go up there and you can pick up the earphones and listen to it. It plays continuously.
Wait, this is at the Cape Ann Museum and not the Heritage Cape Center?
The Cape Ann Museum.
At the Cape Ann Museum.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so... if you can believe this, Columbia, which was built in Essex, went fishing 8 days after her launch. I mean, they had to bring her to Gloucester, rig her, put all the mast and rigging in it, outfit the boat, and off she went to the Grand Banks.
We should note that the schooner Columbia that came up here is just a metal hull, right? It's not the same ship.
The Columbia that came here,
they built that down.
It's 2 years old. She was built to the plans of the original Columbia.
Out of what?
Which they she got the owner from Eastern Shipbuilding in Panama City. He got the plans at Essex Shipbuilding. Took them to John Gilbert Architect in Boston. They redesigned to build the boat out of steel, because that's what he does, is build steel boats.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, that boat is 2 years old. It's absolutely beautiful. You probably saw it. Well, the original Columbia, which was launched in 1923, was lost on Sable Island with all 22 hands in 1927. And they're not even, I don't think they're even sure exactly where it was lost, but they found a dory or two dories washed up on Sable Island from Columbia.
Where's Sable Island?
It's up off Acadia National Park.
It's way off Nova Scotia, south of Nova Scotia, up toward the Grand Banks. And it's a low sand spit. It's a graveyard of the Atlantic. Hundreds and hundreds of schooners came to grief there because, number one, it's low and you don't see it, but it's always foggy there. So anyway, everyone was lost on Columbia. They were all Nova Scotians, even though she was fishing out of Gloucester, except for one. And so anyway, that film, you can see this film, and you can see her taken off on her first trip. And then you see her taken off on another trip, and they don't know for sure whether it was the one where she was lost
or not.
But you see all the happy guys waving at
like the Titanic.
As they're taken off, and you see all the way that they handled the salt fish and all of that. Mm-hmm. Pretty interesting, you know, like brigades of women and the pulling the pin bones out of the salt car and all of that. It's a great film. So.
So it only fished for like 5 or 6 years? It only fished for a few years?
That boat only lasted about 3 years before it came to grief.
Wow.
And, you know, there were 4,000 schooners built over there in Essex. And they were a commodity. They built them.
They were pumping them out. They were like, they were launching the, like, as insane. The whole town.
Right.
It was like the Henry Ford, the model, what do you call it, right. the Model T. Like they were, like these guys would go from this one to this one and they're caulking it, and it was just like an assembly.
The people that built those schooners, they didn't get paid until the ship got launched and the builder got his money. In that film, you'll see some of that. All hard handwork, year round, outdoors.
There's great film from in the Essex Shipbuilding Museum,
right.
too.
So. That kind of completes the Columbia story, but
interesting.
Speaking of the Columbia and the newest, the two-year-old Columbia, David Calvo. David Calvo did a lot of the wood work down below. What do you call that? There's a word for it.
The cabinet work.
Down below, the woodwork, carvings and stuff like that for the Columbia.
David Calvo
here at East Gloucester, woodworking artisan.
Master.
Yeah. Gives classes and everything right around the corner from where you guys are staying. And he is just completing the sign that we've been following up with for the brass monkey.
Brass monkey. Beautiful, oversized, giant monkey that's going to hang outside the brass monkey.
He's been working on that for like a month.
Yeah, right on Main Street, Longbar, a couple months. Right on Main Street. It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
It's hanging this week, I think.
This week, look for that new sign. Well, they have parameters. They can only be so big.
Right, but it's just beautiful. It's going to be really striking. The whole facade of that building has been redone. It looks beautiful. They did a gorgeous job. Yeah. And the sign's just really going to add to that.
So Monica and Gerald Osmera from Nebraska are staying at the accommodations. I think is my favorite place, local kind of place to...
It's wonderful. It's we stumbled upon it. We didn't have reservations, and she had a cancellation and cute little cottage, and love it, right on the water.
It's beautiful. So now, that place, to me, like, it's in East Gloucester, it's in the Shire. Right, you have great.
We don't know where we're at. We're just by the water.
So you came, but you came from Nebraska, but you're coming to Boston, and you happened upon Gloucester, but from the accommodations, you can walk to several great restaurants. There's a million beautiful art galleries. I think they're probably still open, right? They don't just shut down after Labor Day.
Oh no, they're still open.
They're still open. And then there's little private beaches right there.
Yeah.
Like, beautiful walks that you can go take right around to Niles Beach and.
We're gonna check them out today.
Yeah, just definitely check them out. Some great restaurants too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to get a list of those.
Well, let's say there's the Rudder. And the studio. You can also walk to Duckworth from where you are, which is one of the nicest.
Do you think they can get a reservation at Duckworth tonight?
I'm sorry. Actually, tonight is book club night at Duckworth.
Yeah,
they're closed on Sunday and Monday.
Oh,
God. If I was staying at the accommodations, do you guys drink at all?
For sure.
Okay, so that way they go to the studio, because then you can drink. You don't have to worry about driving.
And right.
You stumble. You can tuck and roll your way back to your room.
Yeah. Right around the corner.
Yeah, so tell us about your room.
The room?
Yeah.
Upstairs, little queen rat bed, little kitchenette.
The decor is, they have kitchenette. It's the accommodation, so they have... So you can you could cook there. You could bring little food
there,
and stuff.
Yep.
And you face right out into the little harbor there, right?
We actually face the roadside.
Oh, okay.
But we have a picture. We have a window that we can look out on the harbor.
Harbor.
And,
nice.
You know, coming from Nebraska.
Any of that is like blow your mind. I love that. I love the decor in that place. It's very it's very simple. It's like
simple.
The rooms look like cottages and stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. It's
open ceiling, pitched roof. Yeah. I walked in and I was.
That's the first thing you said.
My little cottage on the water.
I tell people all the time, check out the accommodation.
Very impressed. Well,
and Mona is wonderful. She's a wonderful hostess, isn't she?
What is that?
Did you know that she has another hotel, the Sea Lion?
It's going to be you.
And the Sea Lion is going to be open for winter rental. Did you know
that? The Sea Lion.
The Sea Lion.
Not the accommodations.
I don't know what the schedule is for the accommodations, but I know the Sea Lion, and they have a website. Both places have a website, but the Sea Lion is definitely open for winter rentals, in case anybody's interested. There's availability.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have cottages and apartments and just like efficiency hotel rooms at the Sea Lion. And I've never stayed at them, but we've directed friends there with the outdoor pool and whatnot. So that's a great take, too.
Yeah.
I mean, as great of a location, but great accommodations.
It's probably probably less money.
Right.
I'm guessing.
It doesn't seem pricey.
Right.
I mean, I think it's probably because.
If somebody's looking for a winter rental,
it's
fantastic.
The accommodations for my mom's birthday last year, I guess in May, we got her a room there, and we got a reservation for like 12 of us at the studio. But before we went down for dinner, we stayed in her room on her little deck, and we had hors d'oeuvres and drinks and appetizers.
Perfect.
And then went for dinner at the studio, and then went back to her place and had cake and open presents and all that. So
I'm going to say right now, a very special room is the penthouse at the accommodations.
I'm sure.
It is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's very spacious. The kitchenette, nice sized deck overlooking Smith's
Cove.
And for what they charge, it's actually, I would actually consider it a value. It's not cheap, but for what you get, like for a special weekend, I would say it's a value. Nicole, I was like totally intrigued, and I didn't really I didn't read the whole thing, but I saw you stayed on a houseboat in Boston Harbor, Charlestown.
Yeah. So
what was that all about?
It was our 15th anniversary this summer in August. So I was looking for, like a houseboat, which is funny because then you started talking about the houseboat out there. So right after that, but so I was looking for a houseboat, And also for the kids, because we were trying to book something to go, we wanted to go away for our anniversary, and then a few days later we wanted to take the kids away without spending a fortune before we went back to school. So I was looking at a few different things, and I stumbled upon, it's called the Green Turtle Floating Bed and Breakfast, and they have two...
How did you find it?
I was on HomeAway, but we do everything through VRBO, yeah. Vacation Rentals by Owner, and HomeAway, and I've been looking for something for next summer for a week, like the lake house. I was looking for our anniversary, so I've been kind of looking all over like the Eastern Seaboard for different houses. I want to go down to the Outer Banks. So it was on HomeAway, homeaway.com, but they have two smaller, they call them yachts, you know, so two like 50-foot boats that they rent out, and then this super nice couple lives on a boat right there, and then they have this floating house, which is just, you know, probably slightly more comfortable and more, you know, it's not like the...
Yeah, but you don't get the whole feeling.
Well, it moves in the morning, actually, because...
Do you hear a lot of, like, the clanking of the rigging and stuff like that?
Yeah, you hear that, and then sitting on the deck is so cute, these little like deck chairs and little table. We had dinner out there, a few drinks, friends came in and met us. The water taxi, like Al was talking about, came like literally at my toes and picked us up and took us over to the chart house for an amazing dinner. And then we took an Uber back at the end of the night after going through the North End. But totally reasonable money and super cute. If you went with another couple, then you could have one end and they could have the other end. But the other end was booked, and we literally never saw those people. They just had a different...
I think you should be a concierge.
Yeah.
Because you always find these awesome things that, like, no one knows about.
Poor Lisa sent me an email asking what to do with the kids, and I was like, ding, 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 and she didn't even hear back from her. She was like... Too much information.
So, Gerald, you, we should get back to our friends from Nebraska here, our newfound friends from Nebraska. Cornhuskers that didn't watch the Nebraska game yesterday. I don't understand how that happened.
We updated the score every once in a while.
Okay, yeah. But you guys are farmers. How many generations?
This is a third. My boys will be third time generation.
How old are they? Are they already working the farm?
24 and
21.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm giving them more rope to make decisions. We have oceans of corn. Corn and soybeans we plant. Harvest will start here in about 30 days. We're excited.
How was the... Because we're having a terrible drought, the worst we've ever had. How was yours?
We're going to have a bumper crop.
You are?
Or one of the bumper crops we've had. I mean, we've had really good rainfall this whole summer. We do have some irrigation. We have 9 pivots that we can water if it does get dry, but we have hardly ran them this summer because it's been timely rains.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Corn, you have oceans of corn. How do you, does that, like, see, fish comes in and seasonally, it's not like it used to be where there's just a ton, you know, supply and demand with fish was, mm-hmm. you know, $2 a pound or 20 cents a pound, same fish within three days, you know. How can... What is the distribution mechanism when you're handling that much corn? Do you sell to is someone coming in and saying I'll promise to purchase X amount of corn from you?
We have local elevators back home and ethanol plants that are we haul all our corn to the end user, which is ethanol, which is like 40 miles from our yard. We have 50,000 bushel grain bins we store it in. Then over the winter or through the next 9-10 months, we sell it. We can pre-sell. Like we've been selling corn since probably a year ago now.
Okay, so how much?
So what is any portion of the corn or soybeans that you grow for human consumption?
Ours is not. Ours all goes to the ethanol plant.
Wow.
It could be. If it went a different route, it would be.
It's the same. You wouldn't harvest it or produce it any other way. There's no difference. Corn would for consumption as...
We were talking to a landlord this year mm-hmm. about next year, considering planting some white corn, which would go into food.
Food, right.
Basically your tortilla chips and stuff like that. Huh.
White corn is more of a food grade.
Okay. So if you wanted to go out, and this is totally a silly question, but if you wanted to go out and feel, take an air of corn and have it for dinner, would it be the same corn? Is it different when it's going to the ethanol?
Yes, it is different. I mean, field corn is field corn, and the food grade ain't there.
So you call it field corn or food grade, right?
Right. I mean, there's different grades of seed.
There's different grades.
Is anyone heating, like, the pellet stoves?
Corn stoves. Lots of them.
A lot of corn stoves back home. So what is the corn dried and compressed? Because pellet stoves are compressed sawdust, right, and they make them into pellets. What is a corn heating product like?
It's just a seed of corn that has, 14% or less moisture. So we try and pick corn at 15-16% or less. We consider that dry. So anything under 15% moisture can get burned in a corn stove.
So do they, an ear of corn goes in there?
No, it's a shell. It's shelled. The combine picks it off in the field.
What's that mean? Picks what off?
It's a machine that goes to the field, strips the ears off the stalk, it goes into a cylinder, grinds the corn off the cob, goes into the bin as grain, and then we auger it out into a trailer or a truck, and it goes into our holding bin at home.
And what happens with the core of the cob? What happens to the cob?
It goes out the back of the machine.
So to fertilize for the next year?
Just for compost for next year.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Who knows?
It's an amazing machine.
They ask us about fish and lobsters. Right. They don't know shit about that. I don't know shit about corn, right?
To me, it looks like if you're shaving like a hair, if you shave your head, that's going through the field, shaving the corn.
I get
and
you.
And it goes in there and gets picked off the cob, and the cob goes out the back, and the corn goes out the auger.
And like into like a chute kind of like a thing?
Yeah. I mean, there's 12, we pick 12 rows at a time, and then we just go through the field, 3.5-4 miles an hour, and pick corn.
And just pick corn. It's probably just like what we, you know how like what we do, we've been doing for generations, the same exact thing?
Yeah.
Like there's no rocket science. Well, maybe they probably have a little bit more efficiencies. They've probably worked out a few more efficiencies over the years.
Oh, yeah.
But in our case, not so much.
I mean, nowadays, the technology that's there, the computers on these machines can tell us the yield, the moisture, what part of the field has less nutrients in it, so we know how to fertilize for next year.
Wow.
A lot of data.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of those machines with the computer panels right there. Yeah.
That's where our sons come in. They know the computer, and this guy doesn't quite so much.
Here's a question. Do you have an iPhone? Or a smartphone?
I just got one.
I knew it would be. See, just by what she said, I knew he's one of these guys. Like, all of our fishermen. So it's funny. All of our fishermen, they're like 55-year-old fishermen that for years, I don't want one of those cell phones. Now, like the first guy got one, and then they were like dominoes. They were like Mark Ring. Now he's all over Facebook. Oh, look at the pretty hotel. We're heading out into the thing.
That's what he's doing. He had this flip phone. I said, no, you can't have a smartphone. And now he's on it all the time.
We want video.
I'm working on operating it.
We're gonna have a little.
It's not rocket science. Don't be afraid. You're not gonna. The thing's not gonna blow up in your hand.
Unless it's the latest one.
Note 7.
Note 7.
Yeah, they're blowing up.
You know this. What these guys? It's nothing like going lobstering. These guys drive around in these gigantic machines.
Yeah.
Air conditioning, stereo. You know, out of the sun and all of that.
Just long hours, just like fishing. I mean, it's long hours.
Yeah, because it's pretty rough. I mean, it's probably as efficient as you can. You got to be as efficient as you can, because there's the guy that owns the next 3,200 acres next to you is competing with you for
exactly.
You know what I mean? So you have to, it's all a game of, squeezing out what efficiencies you can.
And you better have that equipment, like, you can't tolerate anything going wrong with it. Because you got a little tiny window in time.
Our window is this big,
right.
Regardless of how many acres you got.
Yep. So how do you spend the off season? here.
Here. Fixing stuff, getting ready.
Our boys do some racing in the summertime. We follow them, and I mean, we irrigate. You know, in the summertime, we irrigate if it's dry, which it hasn't been. But we mow weeds, keep all our road ditches mowed. And
we have the trucking company.
We have a trucking company, which we haul livestock in the Midwest from the feedlot to the packing house and pasture to the feedlot. And
what kind of racing?
We call it figure eight. So if you put a figure eight on the table and they meet in the middle, try and not collide.
Motorcycles?
Cars.
Stock cars.
It's like, it's like not demolition derby cars, but the next step up. So our boys have been...
Check out figure eight racing.
So my boys are going to do summer camp at their house now.
Bring them on.
That's what I'll do.
It is wild. I'm fascinated.
I imagine people get T-boned all the time.
You know what? We don't try... Nobody tries to T-bone. It ain't, I mean, it's, we don't want nobody getting hurt, but they do bump fenders, and you know what racing is, rubbing.
Yep.
I mean, you said that a while ago, but
it's horsepower. Who can get through the intersection in the middle of the eight?
Yeah, it's, yeah. Who gets the intersection first, but there's no stop sign.
Like driving in Gloucester.
And it's
that's got to be pretty exciting.
I mean, and they just do it in horse arenas. I mean, it ain't no fancy special track in Nebraska. I mean, they have a rodeo the night before and a figure eight race the next day. And they just go over...
Did you say rodeo?
Rodeo.
Cowboy.
Wow.
Horses, bulls.
My friend, my best friend growing up, he lived in Addison, Texas for a little while. And when he was there, he's an East Coast guy.
Yeah.
He went there and he went to some rodeos and he said it was like one of the best takes ever. Like they let you bring in coolers... Not just to tailgate before the rodeo, you bring your cooler into the stands.
Yeah.
And watch the rodeo.
That's a good Friday night.
That's a good Friday night, right? That football.
Friday night lights.
Do they still, they don't kill bulls though anymore?
No.
No, that's bullfighting.
Yeah, that's
in the that's other, different. That's in some
That's Mexico and Spain.
There you go, Spain.
Naples. They have that in Naples with the piping plovers. No, that's inside joke. Wait a second. So wait, what do they do with the? Oh, so they try to stay on the bull for as long as they
eight
can.
Bull riding is 8 seconds.
8 seconds. Horse. I mean, they do bronc riding, where they ride horses.
Oh, so it's not not the guy that stays on the longest. It's just the form that you have within the 8 seconds.
Well, there's judges.
Yeah, there's some
that
judging.
Rate you from 1 to 100, and
on style points.
Yeah, I mean on how the it's the animal, how the animal bucked, how you rode it. Did you throw your hand?
If you throw your hand, that's less points or
that's
more points?
That's good.
That's good.
I mean, you hold on with one hand and the other hand is free.
Okay.
And then you just go on with the flow. But it's all about how the animal performs and how you perform.
You stick your landing.
So you get bonus points if you get a crazy horse. Crazy bull.
And if you can hang on to it for eight seconds.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Right, do you start at a higher point already based on the bull you're riding?
No.
Right? So no,
you know what's funny? You know what's so funny?
Fascinating.
How freaking soft we are here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, we can't have our children playing football. Right. Over there, they get the kids in the cars that they're zooming at each other in figure eights, trying not to crash into each other. They get the kids, they throw the kids on top of bulls, and we're worried about concussions in soccer. I mean, how soft have we become as a nation? I mean, not the East Coast. It's like, we can't have our children playing football anymore. Oh, my God. No! Let's have them learn Mandarin.
Yeah.
It's all about Mandarin.
There you go. That'll stop.
So we can talk to other people about this.
What?
So we can talk to other people in the world about concussions and everything else.
Yeah, we can teach them about the perils of football. Oh, my God. Anyway, the Zwiedam, the Holland America Zwiedam, came to town on Friday.
Yes. And it left. It was only here for one night.
It was here for one night, but huge. Once again, these big cruise ships that come in when they ferry the people into town. Kate had to do some business downtown, and she said, "There has to be a cruise ship because there's just throngs of people up and down Main Street."
It was mobbed. That's right. Yeah. I think it could hold like 1,900 people, and they have a they have 800 employees too. So I wonder if the 800 employees get off as well. I don't know.
I doubt it.
Yeah. So. Anyways,
maybe.
But it was a super effort on the part of the chamber, the Cape Ann Chamber, getting everybody there to welcome them. And
a lot of volunteers, too.
So we
sell lobsters to Cruiseport.
Yeah.
And obviously, whenever there's a cruise ship in town, their order goes up, double or triple. So, a lot of these people that in the beginning criticized Cruiseport from coming into town, please shut up.
Well, it's coming back. We'll get to see it again.
You want me to say the dates, or do you have them in your head?
I think it's the 24th and the 29th. Is that right?
That's right. This same ship is coming back, and it seems like in the beginning of the summer, we don't really have too many cruise ships. It seems like the cruise ships want to make this area a destination. I think they make this. They call them crossover. Cruises where they go, they're starting to change the patterns of where the interesting ports are or something.
Okay. Huh.
And in the fall, there's a lot of leaf peeping opportunities.
Right.
So I don't know if that's what I think that has something to do with it, but I'm not positive.
Well, it may this year. I'm sure it's going to be early because of our drought. So yeah.
A lot of people have been reporting leaves in their driveways.
Yeah.
Scary.
That may be.
Yeah, we got to thank Al Bazanson for bringing the Brothers Brew donuts, and Jim and Pat brought some Vigilio's cookies. Okay. Thank you guys for bringing those.
You're welcome.
all right, Muskrat Love.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about the Muskrat Love.
Okay, well, I've been seeing river otters and muskrats while I've been filming around at dawn. Like, and river otters are much bigger than the muskrats, but I never know when I see them in the water, and I'll get to a pond and I'll only see like a little glimpse of something scurry in. So the other day after Hermine, I was at
the storm.
The big storm. I was at Henry's Pond, and I just had my camera, and first I saw it real quick, and then it slithered in. So I ran back to my car and I got my video camera, and it came out again, and it stayed, and it was chewing, and it didn't see me, and it was chewing on little pond grass that was coming up, new shoots, and I could see, because of the drought and then getting some rain, I could see its little canals that it was using, and then it swam across the pond, and all this time it didn't see me, and I got amazing video footage
of a muskrat.
Of a muskrat, yeah. I know you think it's dumb.
No, I don't think it's dumb. I was just joking around earlier, but no, a muskrat. So muskrats are different than beavers.
Yes, you can tell the difference. Muskrats have long, skinny tails, and beavers have fat tails.
Not like a muskrat doesn't have a tail like a possum or a rat, like a long pink.
No, it's tail. Dark and thicker.
That's
creepy. But it's not wide and flat like a beaver, right? It's like this long, okay. And it's about that about an inch thick at the base, and then it tapers down. And then otters have a very different body.
They're slender.
They have a long, skinny body. So, but they're bit, and they're also bigger. So, anyway, it's very exciting.
So, but in your post, the point was that like this storm kind of cleared these freshwater canals out. Yeah. Is that what the point was?
Henry's Pond was very dry. There wasn't really anything there, and the pond filled the pond up a little bit, but also then you could, it reinvigorated his little canals. Because when I've been, way over at Loblolly Cove, mm-hmm. I see a muskrat over there too. And I think he has a whole series of canals that go all the way from Loblolly Cove to Henry's.
Where's Henry's?
Right behind Pebble Beach.
You know where Pebble Beach is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a little road, Pebble Beach here, Henry's Pond here.
Okay. And then that's Mr. Swan's home. So all these characters are going into my Swan film. they're
Mr.
like
Mr. Swan.
Right. Oh, it's, you know, part of Mr. Swan's territory from Rockport Harbor to Gloucester Harbor, and that whole there's amazing wildlife.
In her head.
Right. It's, like it's a children's book waiting to happen.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It is.
Like
it's
very, very Snow White.
Yeah.
Well, you have all the whole narrative. Is that because I know what it is? It's because she's making this film.
Yeah.
So she has in her head the narrative of Mr. Swan and the lost the mate and the mate, and then he found the new mate and he's screwing the new mate and everything.
Right. It's called The Lonely Swan. Is the name.
He wasn't lonely for too long though, was he?
Well, to be honest with this group, I have to reverse all the footage because the footage that I took a while ago, 3 years ago. Of him with a mate and babies, that's how the story's gonna end. Oh. You know what I mean? Because it has to be a happy ending. It's not gonna be, you know.
Be linear and
right.
The thing gets taken apart by
a
coyote.
It's not gonna be the coyote ending. Right.
You guys have a proliferation of coyotes where you are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
More than
fox. We have fox too.
Oh, fox are
cute little family that build that
comes every spring.
Oh,
she has pups.
We had pups. Like about 15 years ago you never saw a coyote here, and there's been a East Coast proliferation of these hybrid, it's they call it coy wolves. They kind of, is that, am I right, am I going to say this wrong, are you going to correct me? Do they breed together?
So to go back, so most scientists don't call them coy wolves. What happened about 30 years ago, as the coyotes were migrating eastward around the Great Lakes, they think they bred with some wolves. That was like 30 to 40 years ago, because a species will breed with another species if there's nobody of its own. But as they've moved eastward and proliferated the whole region, there's plenty of other coyotes for them to breed with.
So there's a little strain of wolf in the coyote. The coyotes that have sprung up, that you hear them every night now, and you see them quite, I mean, this isn't all that, it's a lot more urban than, you know what I mean? Like, we have a lot of homes and stuff.
Right.
So.
Like, houses that are this close together have coyotes running around.
We had one walking right down our street the other day.
Right.
And it's like, Mom, there's a coyote in the street. Right. Like, it's 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, Kate saw one in the backyard.
I stepped in coyote poo yesterday. Yeah. Like, you know, there you go. They're just everywhere. Everywhere I go, they are.
Yeah. So they said, so the theory is, we saw that was on one of these documentaries said that a lot of it's where they seem to be going is down railroad tracks into communities where the rail goes, and they love habitat that's really nice. What they really like is like golf courses. Mm. This is like water, you know, fresh water.
Right, yeah. Cats and dogs. They like to eat cats and dogs. They love this area especially because we have so much coastline, and they're basically scavengers, so they want to eat all the dead birds and dead everything that washes up on the beach. That's why do you ever see hardly any dead things anymore on the beach? It's because the coyotes are really good scavengers. That's their, you know, main thing. So coyotes today in this area have about 10% wolf DNA and about 10% domestic dog DNA, because at the same time that they were breeding with wolves as they were migrating eastward, they also bred with some domestic dogs. Oh. So that's why it's a misnomer to call them a coy wolf, because they're not really. Anyways, but now they're getting the population is so strong, they are now about ready to cross the Isthmus of Panama, so they're slowly going to be proliferating South America as well. So
pretty wild.
Yeah, it is wild, especially considering like 70 years ago they were a West Coast species. They were never, you know.
We don't see foxes here anymore. We used to have foxes. Yeah. Now that you don't see foxes.
We see far fewer. Yeah.
We didn't used to see them either, but we see a lot more over here in the last 4 or 5 years.
That's awesome.
And we've got a little family there at home. It's just fun watching them pups.
Yeah, those pups are just cute.
Who sent us pictures? Oh, were they coyote pups or were they fox pups? Over on Eastern Point.
Because those were coyote
pups. Those are coyote pups. And they were really cute.
They were really cute. Yeah.
That was a
I thought they were cute too, even though I'm not a coyote fan.
Gloucester Stage currently the totalitarians.
Yes.
Kim got to see it last night, was it?
Yes, and my husband Tom wrote a wonderful review. He's going to post, we're going to post it tonight on Good Morning Gloucester.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I'm so busy right now. It takes him like, what would take me like 3 hours to write, it takes him like 15 minutes.
Well, that's his job, right?
Right.
He's
yeah.
a pro.
He's
multi-talented.
He's a ghostwriter.
Her husband, going to her house, right? He's got like 10, 15 paintings in the house in all different styles. Like, not, like, and her husband painted them all. And every one of them is like museum quality. He's wow. a very talented guy. And so he's also a writer and editor. And he was in a band, the Atlantics, that was a big-time regional band, right? Did you say regional?
Yeah.
Regional band in the 80s.
Yeah.
Guy is like just a renaissance.
70s.
70s, was it?
70s.
Renaissance man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so
the play is fantastic. It's a dark comedy. It's Don't Bring Your Kids, very salty language. It's very funny. It's a very appropriate cast of characters for our political time that we're in right
and
now.
And you also said that the guy, Louis D. Wheeler,
yeah.
who was an actor in Black Mass,
yes.
the Johnny Depp book.
Right, he does a fantastic job. All the acting is stellar. The characters are, it's a very physical comedy, like one of them roller skates around the stage acrobatically, and it's very... it's very, very entertaining.
Did you want to mention Jeff Zinn in any way?
Jeff Zinn, who is the managing director there? I forget. I'm getting a little confused because there's Bob Walsh. Bob Walsh is the creative director, and I think Jeff Zinn is the managing director. I'm sorry if I'm making a mistake, Gloucester Stage. But Jeff is also the director of the play.
Right, so
he doesn't usually direct plays.
So that's a unique situation.
Oh, and the set is phenomenal. Yeah. The set design is really
Excellent. Nicole, you, your kids, back to school.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about this yet, right?
No.
Or did we?
We did at the beginning.
Blessing? We said this, right?
It's been a while. What'd you say?
We'll get back around to you. So tell me, so now, my biggest thing with kids going back to school.
Lunches?
School lunch.
I dread them. I loathe making school lunches.
Do your kids eat the school lunches that you prepare?
Usually.
Yeah.
If not, they eat it for dinner.
I have a struggle with my girls one. Because I beg them. I like, let's go to the grocery store together. Where? You pick it out.
Right.
So I get what they want. Then they complain to me that's not what they
want. What they wanted.
Yeah.
You know what, I'm not a good example because I had it so easy. I made big giant breakfasts every morning, like Bismarck's, waffles, pancakes, bacon, egg. And while I did that, my husband made lunches.
Yeah.
So I had it super easy.
It's the toughest part of my week.
They're not making school lunches, or why is this?
Oh, because we're in the East Coast, and you're a bad parent. If you don't have a gourmet meal in your child, you are the bad parent. You don't understand. You guys in Nebraska, you can send your kid to school and they eat the school lunch. But we're here, us pretentious East Coast people, we can't just send our kids to school and have them eat the school lunch because you are labeled as the bad parent.
Yeah.
Well, I think school lunches are changing quite. I think school lunches are improving quite a bit. So
I ate school lunch.
Yeah.
My mother was a stay-at-home mom, and I ate school lunch.
Well, we don't have we don't have a cafeteria. I teach at a private school up in Beverly, and all families pack their lunches. But we do have a lunch. We have Wholesome Tummies. Delivers a lunch to families who want to buy it ahead of time, and they do a great job.
You'd be lucky if Kate just doesn't punch you out right now.
She Kate's right there.
Did you gonna punch her out?
Why?
Punch her out right now. She didn't bring any nice clothes for Connor.
As soon as I walked in, he started yelling at me. I'm like, what have I done? I haven't gone through closets yet. You will get a bag soon.
Hi, honey.
Hi, Kate.
Yeah, we're almost finished up.
We're talking about packing school lunches.
The bane of our existence.
Yeah, but I'm just happy I can pack peanut butter this year.
That's another thing. I bet you probably don't have to do. So these people are from Nebraska. Our new friends from Nebraska.
Hello.
So they're like, Nicole and I were talking about packaged school lunches, how it's a nightmare, right? And they're like, what do you mean? We're like, why don't you, they don't eat at school? I'm like, no, because us pretentious East Coast people, you can't send your kid to school to eat school lunch because you're the bad parent if you don't pack their lunch for them in like intricate the intricate boxes that you have to have, zero trash.
Food.
Oh, and we also explained to them about the hot thing, Mandarin.
All right, let's
Mandarin, right?
I don't understand it.
Yeah. So anyway. It was nice to stop. You going to hang out for a little bit? We're wrapping up here. Just stay 1 second. All right. So I just want to mention, at the beginning of the podcast, what I told you that the Weber has been on cruise control. It was at 289, 291 right now. Have I gone down there to adjust the vents?
Nothing.
Hell no.
So you do adjust.
I don't adjust anything. This is just telling me what the temperature on the grill is. So if it spikes,
then you have to
my shit ain't gonna burn.
Oh, so you can't just do something from up here.
Alarm
will go off if it spikes or something.
It will. Well, I could set it that way, but it's annoying because when I'm cooking down here, my partner is here, and the thing is going off incessantly. He wants to smash it in a million pieces. Well, I want to smash it in a million pieces, so I can imagine what he wants to do. Anyway, GloucesterCast 199. Next week is 200. We're going to do something special. And thanks for everybody. Thanks, Jim and Pat Delpiaz. Thanks, Al Bazanson. Thanks, our friends from Nebraska.
Woo-hoo!
Thank you, Nicole, and thank you, Kim, for the Good Morning GloucesterCast. This is Joey Schumataro signing out. And there's the exit music.